this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back, and welcome back to you.
Thanks, man.
Where have you been?
Took off for a couple days and went to... Went to Albania.
I think you meant weeks.
And Albania and Italy. So I've been to Italy before, but a friend of mine lives in Albania, so...
That's a great choice.
Went to Albania, and...
Italy's my favorite place on the planet to go to. Yes, absolutely.
It was 700 degrees in Rome, and then we got to...
If you're going
to
sweat, though, sweat in Rome.
Yeah. Win in Rome, right? Win in Rome.
But Albania, you don't hear many people say that they've been to Albania.
I like to think that I'm pretty good on geography. I knew where it was, what part of the world it was in, but I didn't know exactly what it was butted up to. So Albania is south of Croatia and north of Greece.
And Croatia is right next to Italy, so it's south of that.
It's just on the other side of the Adriatic from Italy. So it's a 90-minute flight from Rome. Went over there, hung out. It was great. It's one of the Balkans. I didn't know what to expect. I was shocked. Tirana is the capital.
Were they surprised to see an American?
There were no Americans there.
A lot of Americans don't get there.
I was talking to cabbies, and the cabbies were like, yeah, we had a few French people hiking, a few Germans.
Huh.
But, not a lot of Americans. So they love practicing their English with me.
Well, welcome back. It's good to have you back. It's good to be able to share the workload again.
Yeah, of course.
Because, when you're gone, I get to do my workload and your workload. So
says the man who...
Nobody's ever happier to see you.
I'm working
me.
For you on Friday. Yeah, so don't even start with that. So we're back at our favorite haunt here. This is the Manhattan Project Brewing Company, just on the west side of the Dallas skyline, Dallas.
I think it's fitting this time here, too.
They got a lot of new merch.
Huh. What does that say here? Make craft beer beautiful.
I just like need that. Again, at the bottom here, make craft beer beautiful. So what are you having? I have the same thing every time I come here.
I'm having the Gold Flash, which is a honey lager. It's a new one. It's good.
I have the Necessary Evil. It's a Pilsner. Fantastic.
You always get the same thing.
Yeah, I
order.
Need to branch out.
In most places, I can order for you.
And I could order for you, except they're out of the fruit beer over here
today.
Yeah, see,
I threw you off, though. I'm having a honey lager today.
So before we get going here, let's talk about some work you did while I was away.
Okay.
I was going through some of
the... Was it some of your work or some
of
my work?
Okay. No, I wasn't working in the 2 weeks that I was off.
No, but I did your work.
But some of your work. So our producer is Daryl Golden. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that makes this thing happen every week.
He is. Magician.
Cleans it up. The magician. And you were doing an interview with someone on Zoom.
Okay. I don't know where this is going yet. Here.
You were doing an interview with somebody on Zoom, and apparently Daryl had logged into the Zoom first, and the interviewee... kept referring to you as Daryl the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
But your reaction to it every time, Daryl, that's a great question. Daryl, you know what?
That did happen. And the problem was when he said Daryl the first time, I just thought,
hopefully he won't say it again, right?
It's easier to just let that go because he's making a point here and I don't want to interrupt the train of thought and whatever. And it's not going to happen again. It happened like three more times. It was bad.
Your face, though. I mean, if you know Wheeler here, he has... little tolerance.
But no, it
his
was,
face said everything.
It was probably
know.
A face of regret, like, gosh, why didn't I say something the very first time? So the lesson today is, if you learn nothing else from this podcast, when somebody calls you by the wrong name the first time, just say something real
Speak
fast.
Up.
Because it's just going to keep going.
Watching that video cushioned my return.
I'm
so
glad that made that you was, happy. You have strange viewing habits to be sitting and looking for little Easter eggs like that. So the reason that I thought it was fitting that we're here at Manhattan Project is because, if you know about the Manhattan Project, originally that was, building the atomic bomb and all that, in World War II, and the effort to do that and blowing things up and, having to be careful how you do it because you don't want to blow yourself up too. And we're talking about redistricting this time, and so I think all of that fits because redistricting it has become much more of a science because they've got data now that they didn't have back in the days. But this time the data is a little bit old and it might be a little muddy, and we're going to talk about that. But Republicans are ready to take this on again. We just did redistricting here in Texas 4 years ago.
3 years ago,
It was late 2021.
Session, yeah.
Late 2021,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
22, 23, 24, 25. Yeah. Almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years.
We're right in the middle of that. Okay, so about 4 years ago, Usually it lasts a decade when we redistrict, but this time they want to go back to the maps just in time for the midterm elections next year.
Well, rightfully so. You know, whichever party's in control wants to gerrymander and you know, draw as many winning districts as they can for themselves. So this all starts on Monday. The Texas legislature returns to a special legislative session. Mm-hmm. They're going down there for 30 days. The governor called them back. They're going to consider a number of things, THC.
18 different things on there.
Yeah, whether to ban THC is a big one, how to respond to the flash flooding disaster we've seen in Central and South Texas.
Surely that's got to be the first item on there. I mean, you got to get to that.
Yeah. You know what? Everyone I'm talking to says we're not, since it's still kind of going on, we're not quite sure exactly what we need to do yet. So
I think they know they need sirens.
We need to get the facts done first. But the other big thing, as you talked about, is redistricting. And that's you know, the huge one we're going to be talking about in this episode.
Which can never get done in a 30-day special session. I don't believe it.
I don't know.
I think you're going to have multiples.
Well, insiders are telling me that the Trump administration has already created maps, has already drawn proposed maps, and you're going to hand those over to Republican leaders in Austin mm-hmm. and let them debate and vote on these. They'll have to have hearings, et cetera. But in 30 days, that is certainly a question. Can it get done in 30 days? To back up and zoom out here, on a national level, Republicans have a 3-seat majority
right.
in Congress. And the party in power, in this case it's Republicans, President Trump, the party in power doesn't usually do very well in midterm elections. It's usually a check on the party in power. And so President Trump and Republicans are concerned they're going to lose some seats and lose control of Congress in the next year's midterm election.
So this is a different way to ensure that you can pick up seats or maintain seats that otherwise might have been wiped out in a midterm election, in case there's a quote-unquote blue wave.
If there is, or you know, if there's just the traditional the traditional pushback against the party in power. So there's a lot at stake here. On the national level, control of Congress is really at stake, and President Trump and Republicans are saying, listen, let's go to the biggest Republican state mm-hmm. where it's growing and there is room for movement.
This isn't the only state where they want to do this, but
exactly.
It's the biggest.
It's the largest. And Republicans think, and President Trump think, they can pick up 5 more seats here. The 38 total seats. And Republicans have a huge majority.
They have 25
of them.
25.
Yes.
So they want to try to get to 30. We'll see.
We'll see if they can get that far. So there are a number of folks we're going to talk to on this episode. Abby Puck is a long-time...
No, Abby Livingston.
Abby Livingston.
She's with Puck.
She's with Puck. Thanks a lot. See, I'm still on vacation.
Jeez, obviously. Still in Albania. Brain's still in Albania.
Yeah, it's the jet lag. Abby Livingston, long-time friend of ours, been on the program for a long time. She's worked for Roll Call. She's worked for the Texas Tribune. She is a writer, a congressional mm-hmm. writer, congressional correspondent for Puck News. And she's watching this closely from afar and in D.C., where... Democrats and Republicans are watching this. So we talked to her about really what's at stake here over the next 30 days in Austin. Hey, Abby, good to see you again here. For Texans who haven't followed this, will you lay out what Republicans want to do?
Absolutely. So first of all, redistricting really is traditionally only happens in at the beginning of a decade. In 2021, Texas Republicans drew the current map. And they drew it with the idea in mind that the incumbents wanted to be safe. There had been the 2018 cycle and the 2020 cycle where Democrats were really threatening many Republican delegation members. They ended up only picking up 2 seats, but a lot of Republicans in the suburbs, including in DFW, had to run much harder than they'd ever run before. And so to save money, to save effort, and to save seats, they bolstered their own districts. And so Donald Trump has come in mid-decade and said, nope, that's not good enough. And he wants a very aggressive map to help Republicans save the House. And it appears Texans are on track to do that. And what I found super interesting about that is traditionally the Texas Republican delegation has been such a lockstep group of people that no one ever bullied them around. And they seem very unhappy with this prospect. But they're going along with it anyway, at least publicly, with a smile on their face. And the reason they're reluctant is that in order to draw 5 competitive seats or endanger 5 Democrats, you've got to pull Republicans from other districts. And, you know, it's really scaring some folks.
If 2018 was tight for some congressional Republicans and they wanted to fix that in 2021 in the legislature, it seems like Trump kind of wants to undo that and make these districts less Republican.
Absolutely. And that's what has so many people unnerved. And so, yes, that is absolutely what's happening.
And I see the President Trump wants to see if he can carve out five new seats or get five seats that Republicans can win here in Texas. Is that realistic?
It sounds like they're going to do it. But
can they win five seats, though?
You know, I've seen some back of the envelope maps drawn, and I can kind of see how they do it. South Texas is very easy because it's already trending toward the Republicans. But if they go for the DFW suburbs, the Houston suburbs, or the Austin suburbs, that could jeopardize the Republicans around them. And so, and I would just say, Texas Republican map makers are very good at this. They know what they're doing, and now they're having to undo their own work. And so, you know, and then on top of that, you'll get the map, but then these incumbents will start fighting over things. Like, you may hear one say, I want Cowboy Stadium in my field, in my district, or things like that. And so the maps get tweaked on, sometimes around non-ideological lines. And so it's really uncertain. It's a really good time if you're a Texas member of Congress to have friends in the state legislature. And it's causing some anxiety.
Yeah, it sounds like that. Which Democrats do you think might be vulnerable? You mentioned South Texas, Vicente Gonzalez, Henry Cuellar, I presume. Who else?
Yes. And I think it's, and this is highly, highly speculative. I would, and this is not, I really want to underscore the speculative nature, but I would probably say it's one of several, and it's, or a few of several, and it would be Lloyd Doggett in Austin, Julie Johnson in DFW, Lizzie Fletcher in Houston, and Sylvia Garcia in Houston. And we just have to wait and see. It probably isn't going to be all of them, but that's where it's almost like a game of musical chairs, and we're all just kind of waiting to see who doesn't get the chair.
Well, let's talk about Democrats for the last question here. The Democrats in the House of Representatives and in the Senate in 2003 and the House of Representatives in 21, they broke quorum. They left the state to try to stop this. They only delayed it. Democrats don't have a lot of options now. They have even fewer seats in the legislature than they had before. What do you think their options are to stop this, or do they have any?
Democrats are just so powerless in this situation. That's why there was such a hard push in 2020 to win the state house for Dems so that they would have a say in this. You know, I think it's too early to speculate, but I'm gonna. I think we might see a flight from the state. I haven't heard serious talk about that, but there is some chatter. And that has its own unintended consequences. That's what fueled Jasmine Crockett's rise in 2021, was she got a lot of national attention when she was in Washington the last time. So, you know, it's, I think the Democratic options are mostly delay.
Yeah. I've kind of heard the same thing on that. Abby, always appreciate the insight. Thank you.
Always happy to chat with you.
All right, Abby's laying out the nuts and bolts there of what to expect, but Republicans are really hopeful. That's why we brought in Alfredo Rodriguez. He's the principal at Dice Communications in Dallas. He's also a longtime veteran of Republican politics in Texas and across the country as well. Alfredo, good to see you again, man.
Thanks for having me.
What do you have in there, by the way? You
just a club soda this morning.
Yeah, that's this morning. You had like it's like 8 a.m. here, don't
you? You had to call us out.
It's
there.
Not that early. It's 11:53 as we record this. Hey, you know, we spoke a moment ago and said that, you know, President Trump thinks that Republicans can get five seats in Texas, can flip five seats. Is five seats realistic?
I think it's ambitious, but I think we can get five seats. I think Republicans can certainly get five seats. I think the obvious region of the state where we're looking to pick up is going to be in South Texas. And so if I'm, you know, Congressman Gonzalez or if I'm Congressman Cuellar, I'd be really scared. Mm-hmm. You know, those seats are probably going to be drawn with some new areas to increase Republican majority populations, and they're going to have tough races ahead of them. But I also think that, you know, Al Green, who's just south of Houston, there's very many pockets of the Houston suburbs that can be drawn into that district to make that Republican. And I would also be fearful if I was, you know, Jasmine Crockett, simply because she continues to be a thorn in the side of President Trump. And we know that President Trump likes to, you know, punch back. And she is continuing to, you know, spew baseless liberal rhetoric and attacking the president. So I wouldn't be surprised if her South Dallas seat becomes more Republican by picking up some of the, you know, other parts of the Metroplex.
I mean, you'd have to really branch out and go towards Kaufman County or deeper into Ellis County, I guess, into like Jake Elsie's district to get
And that's the tricky thing about redistricting. You know, I was involved with the last mid-decade redistricting. I was at the National Republican Congressional Committee. I was a regional political director, and Texas was one of my states. And that cycle, you know, we ended up picking up, you know, five seats in Texas as a result of the redistricting. We actually grew the majority that election in 2004. And it's tricky, and it's more tricky than your typical decennial redistricting, because it's, like you said, operating on older data. There are people that continue to move into the state, you know, yesterday, the week before that, and the month before that, that we don't have information on.
That's what I meant by muddy. Yeah, it gets muddy, doesn't it?
It certainly does. But I think the trickiest part about, you know, mid-decade redistricting is it catches the current members of Congress, you know, off guard.
Yeah.
You have to have buy-in from the members of Congress and the Texas congressional delegation.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have these members who have ruby red districts part ways with part of that ruby red portion of their district.
Yeah, but do you really need buy-in, though, if President Trump says, let's do this?
Well, he certainly is the leader of the party, and people tend to follow his direction.
Sure.
And I think the overall goal here is to increase the majority. And I don't think even the current members in the Texas delegation are all that happy that, you know, all these votes that they have to take, you know, boil down to, you know, party line or picking up a few Democrats or a handful of Democrats to pass legislation to, you know, to further the president's agenda.
Mm-hmm. Just to put a finer point on the muddy data here, though, because I think that that's going to come into focus a lot during this, because, you know, as we said before, you know, you've got computer help now. You're able to really get down very granularly and draw these districts exactly as you want them to be. But you're relying on that census data, and I thought Politico did a really good job on this. They were talking about the last time this was done, and that census data came out in 2021. It was a little bit late because it was COVID, you know, and all of that. And they said it was already imperfect because it was during COVID, and it was hard to get out there and knock on doors and figure out who's living where and all of that. So you already had a little bit of issue with that back then, and those are the numbers they're still going to be working with and the data they're still working with. And it says that since then, it says also that Texas was one of the states with a big undercount that time around, as it turned out later on. So they figured out after the fact that, man, we missed a lot of people there. And then on top of that, they say that since then, the population here has grown by 2 million people, and these districts don't account for that right now. So you're kind of taking some shots in the dark, and you're trying to also redistrict here for 2026, and there's going to be growth leading up to that. It seems very imperfect as a science compared to what we normally see with redistricting this time around.
Sure. Well, it is imperfect, but there are a lot of experts that are involved in the process. You not only will have the RNC, you know, combing over, you know, recent data from recent elections, even down to the municipal level. You'll have lawyers who are, you know, making sure that, you know, every box is checked and that everything is going to be compliant with any, you know, lawsuits that may arise. And in Texas, lawsuits always arise with regards to redistricting. And so, you know, there are a lot of experts involved.
There are mathematicians
involved.
That are brought in.
There are mathematicians. There are statisticians. Yeah. I mean, there are people that have done this previously. I'm sure that they're going to call up some of the veterans that were part of the process back in 2003.
Hmm. Yeah, indeed so. Vicente Gonzalez, you mentioned, Henry Cuellar, Al Green out of Houston, Jasmine Crockett. How about Mark Vesey? I've heard his name bounced around because when his district was redrawn, it really now stretches all the way over into Dallas and into parts of northern Dallas. Is VC in trouble at all? I mean, Beth Van Dyne's district was, she had a, what, plus 25, I think? You could easily draw some Republican voters into his district.
Right. Well, the smallest margin of victory for any of the Texas Republicans was 14%, and that was Maya Flores. And everyone else won, like you said, by many of them by, you know, 20 plus points in their district.
So they can afford to give away some of those votes
to a district next door.
But,
Right. You know, as you know, as a political consultant, when I go out and look at, you know, congressional races, you know, an R plus five district is typically considered a safe Republican district. We have districts here in Texas that are far exceed, you know, R plus five. And so, you know, members are going to have to, you know, be comfortable with losing some of their Republican constituents and placing them in other districts so that we can achieve that five seat net gain.
But the thing you're trying to avoid here, if you're Republican, is what they call the dummy mander. When you're trying to gerrymander and you get it wrong, and they call it a dummy mander for obvious reasons. I saw one expert here in Texas who was quoted saying that Democrats are going to come out hot about this. They're going to criticize this. They're basically going to say that, you know, you're trying to stack the deck. You're trying to change the rules in the middle of the game because it's the only way you can hold on to power, that sort of thing. We've already been seeing some of that from Democrats. But he was saying, this expert was saying that they know, though, Democrats do, in the back of their minds, that in some cases, this is going to make the landscape more favorable for them in some districts because that district is not going to be so solidly safe Republican, and they might be able to compete in some places a little bit better than they would have been able to. Because you only have so much space and so many voters that you can carve up, so you've got to make some of these safe Republican districts a little bit more competitive for Democrats.
Well, I think this notion that Texas is moving closer to turning blue and that we may have a Democrat win statewide for the first time in two decades.
We've heard that for a long time.
We've heard that for a long time. Yep. That's not the case. Texas is getting more conservative. It's getting more Republican. I don't see any scenario, really, that Texas loses the U.S. Senate seat in 2026. I see opportunity for us to pick up 3 to 5 seats here in Texas. And if it's done, you know, smartly and accurately, I think we can achieve 5 seats.
But we've had people on this podcast who have said that, yeah, this is a red state, but more than that, it's a non-voting state, that so many people just don't show up, especially in the big cities that, you know, might tend to be more Democrat-leaning. Is there a risk here that you offend any voters, that you energize a voter who might not normally head to the polls if they hear Democrats enough saying that, you know, this is politicians choosing their voters, not the other way around? Do you run a risk there of waking people up who might have stayed home?
I don't think you run the risk of energizing people that haven't voted to go out and vote in large numbers. I don't think you run the risk of, you know, dissuading people from coming out to vote as a result of redistricting. What I would fear more than anything is that there are a lot of members in the Texas delegation who haven't run a tough race in a long, long time, who don't raise money as well as they should, who continue to rest on their laurels. Their constituent services are probably lacking because they have a safe Republican seat.
It's easy.
And have probably used consultants that continue to run the same cookie cutter campaign that got them elected the first time. And those members of Congress need to be more worried about that. You know, those things that they can change and they have control over, than some mass, you know, uprising by voters to come out and vote them out.
Do you think that there are a lot of those who are kind of sleepy like that and just haven't been practicing and might not be ready for a tough game?
Well, I think you're going to see next fundraising quarter, after these lines are drawn, you're going to see robust fundraising totals from Republicans. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're going to wise up to the fact that, well, I've only been raising a couple hundred grand where, you know, I sit on the Energy and Commerce Committee, or I sit on the Ways and Means Committee. I sit on these, you know, A committees. And I ought to be raising, you know, $600,000-$700,000 each quarter. And I ought to be, you know, campaigning. You know, there are many members of Congress that don't do direct mail, that don't do television advertising, digital advertising, because they know that their Republican seat is so safe. And those people need to be a little bit worried. But I do think that after the lines are drawn, that many of these members of Congress, if not all of them, are going to wise up, raise money, tend to their constituents as they should, and run real races and hire real consultants. Hmm.
In the past, when districts have been redrawn here in the state, people sue as courts consider this. I know, I think at least the last two times, courts have said, listen, for the next election, keep the current map, not the new map, keep the current one, and we'll figure this out. Is there a chance that could happen and this whole thing just doesn't get done in time for the 26th election for Republicans?
So that happened in Louisiana, and it's happened in other states as well. I don't think that we're going to fall, I don't think that Republicans are going to fall prey to that. I think that we will have new lines. Well, the courts have been very generous when it comes to, you know, congressional lines and congressional redraws in Texas. We seem to win those cases, you know, despite the anger and fury and money pumped in behind lawsuits by Democrats.
But there's still one pending in El Paso, isn't it? The 21 redraw?
It is. It's still pending. And I think ultimately we win that.
Let me ask you this about that case. Does that case, in your estimation, get sort of reopened? Because that wrapped up in May. We still haven't gotten a decision in that case. But the interesting thing is in that case, the state, Republicans, argued repeatedly on the witness stand that this was a race-blind process. We drew these latest maps in 2021. We didn't consider race at all. Well, the predicate here for the governor asking for the lines to be redrawn again this year is that the Trump Justice Department said, hey, you know, some of these districts look like they were drawn with, you know, race in mind, and that's not constitutional, and we need to change that. So, you know, basically the other side has gone back to that court now and said, hey, we need to consider this now, because the governor is kind of lining up with this idea that race was involved, and they said that race wasn't involved. Does that case get reopened? Does that complicate that case?
I think that case gets put on hold as a result of drawing new lines. Mm. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't think that a judge is going to go ahead and make a decision based on the fact that come Monday, we have a special session and redistricting is on the call, and they're going to want to see, what do they do, or is this case now moot and doesn't deserve our attention anymore? Maybe we need to focus on what may come, what lawsuits may come as a result of the new lines.
Well, does that give those new lawsuits then any potency to say, hey, we're suing on these new maps that they drew, and we're using their own words that the current maps that were in place did not consider race, so these shouldn't have been redrawn? Does it give a more potent argument?
Well, I think the great fallacy when Democrats argue about the Voting Rights Act is they talk about, you know, gerrymandering, and they talk about, you know, separating, you know, minority populations. Look at the facts. Latinos used to be a reliable voting bloc in Texas. Mm-hmm. They no longer are. They have been bleeding Latino votes across the state of Texas in high numbers. South Texas, especially in this last election. So the Voting Rights Act also says don't consider race in drawing districts, but it doesn't say keep minorities in one district so that Democrats can win. Hmm. That's not what the Voting Rights Act says. It says don't consider race and use race as the basis for drawing a district. Hmm.
So President Trump is pushing this whole thing. I've talked to a number of Republicans in Congress of the Texas delegation. I'm sure you have as well. They're pretty skeptical of this thing here. What are you hearing from Republicans about this?
I think everyone probably initially had some skepticism, and I think when they sat down and heard the president speak and his enthusiasm for redrawing these lines, I think they kind of fell in line and were like, okay, this is, I want to be on the train. I don't want to be left behind, so I'm going to get behind this. And now I'm going to do my due diligence to make sure that my district is drawn so that I have a safe seat, even if it means that it's no longer, you know, an R plus 18, now it's an R plus 10.
Yeah, it's like self-preservation at that point.
Right.
You get in line. Take us inside a little bit. Why the skepticism from some originally, though?
Well, members of Congress don't like change. They have to go through redistricting every 10 years, so they don't want to have to go through it twice in 10 years. And so, you know, like I said before, you know, members of Congress and the Texas delegation who haven't raised money as they should have been raising money, haven't run campaigns as aggressively as they should have been running campaigns, probably initially were like, whoa, I don't want to change any, you know, any of the calculus here, because I know that if I do nothing, if I just continue to do what I've been doing, I'm going to be reelected. Now there's going to be a new calculus, there's going to be new lines, there's going to be new voters that they need to speak to and talk to and communicate with through voter contact. And so now they need to, you know, do what's necessary to maintain their seat and keep it in Republican hands.
Now, we've seen this before where you might end up, if you start, you know, messing around with things and drawing, where you might end up putting red on red, you know, a red against a red here. Is there a possibility that these districts kind of collide in a way that it's Republican versus Republican?
There's always that possibility. It's happened in other states. I believe it's happened in Texas as well. But I think that if the goal, the ultimate goal, is to net five seats, I don't see how you can pit a sitting Republican member of Congress against another sitting Republican member of Congress and still achieve a five seat net gain.
You said five seats are ambitious. What's realistic?
I think three or four. I think four. I think four. I think we could do four. And I think the four that we mentioned. I think that you know, Vicente Gonzalez and Henry Cuellar, you know, probably should you know, be you know, measuring the drapes in some other office other than their congressional office.
That makes sense with all the Republican voters down there. I'm still confused about why Republicans think they could draw Jasmine out of her district. I mean, it can be done with gerrymandering. Of course, we've seen that, you know, everywhere.
Or just redrawing the lines, maybe.
Sure.
Not gerrymandering.
Well, gerrymandering, come on, Alfredo. That's what it is here.
Well, again, the Metroplex is very, very large, and the population extends very far outside of downtown Dallas, where we're sitting. And so there are ways to bring in Republican votes to make Jasmine's district a lot less Democratic and more vulnerable. I think it's even easier in Al Green's seat. You know, Al Green is a very compact seat right now. And if we were to simply draw his district that it included his home and a few neighborhoods around his home and picked up some Republican areas in the suburbs of Houston, that he would also be in jeopardy. And so I think those are three seats immediately that look likely to become Republican. And like I said, you know, President Trump likes to punch back, and Jasmine Crockett is often punching you know, up towards Trump and you know, spewing liberal you know, rhetoric.
Now, Democrats don't have a lot of power to fight this here in Texas. What do you anticipate from the minority party here? What will they do? How will they, you know, try to stop this? Will they try to stop this?
Well, they'll certainly try to stop this. I would go so far as to say that they have no power to stop this. This is going to happen. They may try to, you know, shirk their responsibilities as elected officials and, you know, skip town and, you know, maybe for a week or 2 weeks not have a quorum so that they can go ahead and vote on the new maps. But ultimately, they're going to have to come back and take a tough vote, and that tough vote is going to result in new districts for Republicans.
So the thing I've been curious about, if they break quorum like they did in 2003 and in 21 as well too, if they happen to carry it out through a couple of special sessions, which I think they did in 2003, what's the deadline on this getting done in order to notify voters of what their district's going to be? Does this have to be done December 1st or when? And if there's a hard deadline, couldn't the governor and the legislature just push the primary election back a month?
That's what I was going to say, and I hope that doesn't happen, but that has happened in other states. I've done a lot of work in North Carolina. North Carolina has moved its congressional primary elections from March to May to June, back to March to May, several times in their redistricting, mid-decade redistrictings. So that is an option. You know, December 1 being the beginning of the filing deadline, maybe they decide, okay, well, we're in our third special session. We're going to get it done in this special session, but we need to give some time, and so maybe we need to push the filing deadline back 30 days or back 45 days. And that means that the primary is not going to be the first Tuesday in March, maybe the first, you know, Tuesday in May.
Well, getting to muddying things up, but that would just make it harder for campaigns, I guess, Republicans and Democrats, to make sure they get their voters to the polls when these elections actually happen.
Yes, but I do think that there is far greater enthusiasm amongst Republicans right now than there are Democrats, and certainly in the state of Texas.
So we have been watching, you know, how this reverberates around the country because everybody's paying attention to this. We've got the governor out in California, Gavin Newsom, big Democrat, big opponent of Donald Trump. He's saying two can play at this game. Maybe here in California, we need to have a look at doing the same thing. And you know, essentially, he's, you know, suggesting that, you know, maybe they, you know, redraw maps as well. It's a little trickier for them because theirs is done by a commission that's mm-hmm. supposed to take the partisanship out of it. Is there a risk, though, that we start seeing escalation with other states trying to blunt what Texas has done? And then, you know, if another state, you know, a blue state does it, then another red state, you know, tries to blunt what they just did. Is there a risk that we just see this escalation?
I think that Gavin Newsom's a lot of bark and not a whole lot of bite. I would be surprised if he goes through with trying to redistrict in the state of California. Like you said, it is much more difficult to do that. Here it's done by the legislature, and that's an easier avenue and path to go ahead and redistrict the lines in the state. So it would take a lot for Gavin Newsom, and I think that running for president in 2028 is first and top of his mind, and I don't know that he wants to get embroiled in that type of fight and, you know, have punches thrown at him and get bruised up before that.
When we start thinking about these things, and I guess we'll be a little philosophical here, when we start talking about, you know, this state doing it and then that state wanting to do it to counter what that state did, and, you know, at the end of the day, each one of them is drawing districts that are reliable and totally safe, where there isn't much competition between parties anymore, you know, on both sides. Is that good for democracy anymore? If people, you know, if a huge number of people live in districts where it's decided in a primary by, you know, 5% of the voters, essentially, and there's no real general election competition?
Well, elections have consequences, and the winner gets to decide the fate and the path of redistricting, and that's what we're doing here in Texas.
But is that good for democracy, though, if you see that in state after state, you know, blue and red, where basically they choose and make it where it's one-party dominance and it's not going to be broken?
Well, we've had that for a long time, and you see states like New York and you see states like California. California used to be a state that continuously gained congressional seats. This next redistricting, it may be the first time that they lose congressional seats because people are mass exiting the state of California. We've already seen it in Illinois. We've seen it in New York, where they're losing congressional seats. So, you know, these big states that used to have large congressional delegations are losing congressional members of Congress because they have to redistrict.
So you manage campaigns when you're not on the podcast with us here. And tell us what's happening behind the scenes mm-hmm. for Republicans. If Jasmine Crockett, Vicente Gonzalez, Al Green, Henry Cuellar are in trouble, do you have Republican council people, legislators looking at these seats thinking that, well, if this gets redrawn and I'm in that district, then I might run for this? Is that happening right now?
Yeah, I do think that probably every, you know, member of the Texas legislature is keeping a close eye on this. One, because they're going to have to take a vote on it. But two, you know, politics is all about opportunity, and redistricting presents a prime opportunity to seek another office. And so I think if you're, you know, even a councilman or a mayor or a county commissioner or a county judge, you're probably keeping a close eye on this and looking at it. I would also add that, you know, you have a lot of members of the Texas Senate who are running for comptroller and running for attorney general. They may reconsider what office they're running for once these lines are drawn and decide, I think I'm more popular than Congressman X. Why don't I challenge him?
I'm going to head to D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we let you go, I have to ask you, because you were talking about how, you know, Democrats for a long time, we've heard from them here in this state saying this is going to be the year that we're going to win a statewide race.
and it hasn't happened in decades now. I saw a tweet from you the other day, though, trying to recruit someone into that Senate race to challenge John Cornyn, and you said Ken Paxton cannot win a general election here. Do you really believe that?
I don't believe that he cannot win a general election. I think it would be very difficult. He carries a lot of baggage. The Texas House of Representatives impeached him. He was lucky that he had friends in the Texas Senate that bailed him out. But I don't see, even though he's leading in the polls against John Cornyn, I don't see how, if he were to win that primary, that he would have that he would lose a general election.
Alfredo, come on, Donald Trump. Same thing happened to him. He got reelected. He was impeached. He has 34 felonies. Voters don't care about that stuff.
Ken Paxton is not Donald Trump.
Ago. Well, true. No, you're exactly right about that. You're right about that. But you think that he couldn't? He might have trouble winning a general election. I mean, clearly, Democrats think that.
I do. In fact, I think that Castro is probably taking a serious look at this. Mm-hmm. I think he is the most qualified and probably the best candidate that Democrats could recruit to run for the U.S. Senate. But they have a problem. They have two losers, not personal losers, but electoral losers who are likely to seek this seat in Beto O'Rourke and in Colin Allred. And they've proven that they can't win in this state, statewide, in an election. And so,
You think Democrats are looking for someone else right now?
I think that they should look for someone else, and I think that they probably would be open ears if someone else were to emerge that had a far better, ability to raise money and to connect with voters than either Colin Allred or Beto O'Rourke.
This is going to be an interesting midterm.
Yes.
Last question here from me. When all this kicks off on Monday with a special session, what should we be watching for?
Well, I don't know that redistricting is going to be the first thing of the call that's going to be considered. I think that probably, the Central Texas floods and what do we do there will be considered. I think there's a lot that's already been done with regards to the property taxes and what we need to do in that area. And then obviously, the THC ban. That's something that, Governor Abbott, vetoed. And, so he's got some skin in the game to make sure that the THC industry is regulated as opposed to banned in the state of Texas.
Yeah, I don't think the lieutenant governor is going to give up on that anytime soon either. That was a big priority for him this time around.
It was a big priority. I do think, as you mentioned before, I do not think that redistricting will be done in one special session.
You don't think
How
so?
Many is it going to go, do you think?
I think it'll take two.
Two, okay.
I think it'll take two.
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised if it only takes one. The president is pretty persuasive. And he really wants to make sure that he has a Republican majority in the House of Representatives.
Is this, though, a situation where D.C. is running things for Texas? I mean, this idea sort of originated there and came here. Usually Texas is so independent and, we're going to do things and we'll do things that originate here. And if lawmakers here wanted to do this, they would have done this in the regular session. Is this...
I don't think there's a big brother in the room. There's certainly collaboration, but absolutely, you have lawyers in D.C., you have lawyers in Texas, you have the RNC, you have the Texas GOP, you have the Texas legislature, you have the members of Congress that are currently serving. Everyone is going to weigh in with an opinion on how these lines ought to be drawn. I think the
is everyone
greatest
on the same
influence.
Page?
Right now, I doubt it, and I do think that the greatest influencer is Donald Trump, this seems to be a high priority for him so that he can maintain a Republican majority in the House of Representatives.
Well, Alfredo Rodriguez, veteran of Republican politics, principal of Dice Communications in Dallas, thanks for coming out, man. We appreciate your input as always. We'll be calling on you as this thing progresses.
Thank you for having me.
And a special shout out to our host, again, as always, Manhattan Project Brewing Company, for having us. We appreciate that. And it's good to see you, man.
Yeah, glad to see you too. It's good to finally see this face
Daryl,
again.
I mean, Jason.
Yeah, Daryl. Yeah. Just call me Daryl.
Daryl.
thanks for watching. We'll talk to you next week.